This is WJBC This Week.
At least they have to make the appearance of putting up a good fight because they want to remind people, and particularly their base, of what happened to President Obama's nomination of Merrick Garland.
Just looking at the effectiveness of the ban, it's not really helping our national security. And as we said before, there have really been no attacks by any immigrants and refugees from these countries.
That's 100 families that we could be serving if we could fill those positions going forward. So it's been a big impact, especially in our rural communities.
We've captured today probably close to at least 10,000 posts that save Illinois State and Kobe. Kobe Buffalo meat in them.
Welcome to WJBC This Week, where we take a look back at the top stories and interviews from the past week. On the program this week, reaction to President Trump's Supreme Court pick, insight on the effect the state budget impasse is having on nonprofits in Illinois, and National Signing Day met tons of attention for a particular ISU recruit, plus a group of local high school students ask Congressman Darren LaHood to condemn President Trump's order on immigration. That and more coming up. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. President Trump announced his nomination to fill the vacant Supreme Court seat this week. To offer insight on the pick, Illinois State University Professor Emeritus Bob Bradley spoke with WJBC's Scott Laughlin and Patty Penn about Neil Gorsuch.
All right, let's talk about President Trump's pick, his selection for Supreme Court Justice. The Democrats going to fight this?
Oh, yes, they have to.
Why?
At least they have to make the appearance of putting up a good fight because they want to remind people, and particularly their base, of what happened to President Obama's nomination of the court, Merrick Garland. And that's one of the contextual elements to this, is that the Democrats are going to want to remind their base that they are going to fight a good fight because they feel that it was dirty what the Senate Republicans did to Garland's nomination.
So they're just going to air their dirty laundry. They're going to bring it out. Are they going to delay the process at all? Or are they just going to let it be known, we don't like what you did, but we're going to take this guy? He can't hear me.
Yeah, he can hear you. Go ahead again.
Oh.
Now I can, yeah.
Okay, so they'll go through this show and then vote for him anyway, right?
I think, yeah, in the grand scheme of things, I think Gorsuch will get approved. And I think he will do it without the Senate having to modify their filibuster rules. I think he will get the 60 votes. Because ultimately what the Democrats will want to do is show the appearance of a good fight on this one, but save the real fight for Trump's next nomination.
Yes. So why don't the Democrats take the high road on this, Bob, and say, you know what, it's a good selection, we can live with this, let it fly, and then save that battle for the next one, because the next one's the one that's going to make the difference.
Well, and I think that ultimately is what they're going to end up doing, but initially they can't do that for political reasons, and that's because we have these little things coming up in 2018 called the off-year election, and about two-thirds of the seats that are going to be up are held by Democrats. And so the Democrats, in appealing to their base, and those Democrats who want to win another term, are going to have to look like they fought this, at least for a bit, and then save the real salvos for the next nomination, whether it's to replace Ginsburg or whether it's to replace Anthony Kennedy.
Bob, this is why people hate politics.
Oh, and it's why I'm so interested in it.
So talk about his selection.
Behind the scenes. Hmm?
Let's talk about the president's selection for Supreme Court Justice. Do the liberals need to be very concerned about this guy?
in the grand scheme of things, he is going to be one of the more conservative members of the court. I mean, he will be not quite as conservative as Clarence Thomas, but closer to Clarence Thomas than the other conservative members of the court. But in terms of the hot-button issues, for instance, lots of people are talking about abortion and what this guy will do in regard to abortion. And for liberals and conservatives alike, you have to remember that the Supreme Court takes, on average, a major abortion case about once every 3 years. It's not like it dominates the agenda of the Supreme Court as some other cases. Now, where this guy would concern liberals is his rulings in regard to corporate and business interests. It's pretty clear from his rulings on the appellate court and what he's done in practice that he's a pro-business type of guy. And that actually, business cases make up more of the court's docket than social issues. And so that's where, if you're a liberal, you get a little bit concerned about that.
So what's on the docket? Let's talk about the time frame. Let's say he gets approved from the Senate, it flies through. How soon will he be sitting on the bench?
Well, he could be sitting on the bench at the end of the term, which means that he will be sitting on the bench when the court hears its most important cases. Now, a few of those cases will deal with some of the state's restriction on voting rights, and those will be real interesting cases to pay attention to, because Republicans have gotten more control of state legislatures, and there's been more restrictions put on voting rights, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, particularly in light of the general election coming up in 2018.
So let's talk about the event last night. We were talking earlier this morning. I don't recall ever a revealing of a Supreme Court justice nominee in prime time the way it was done last night. Am I wrong?
No, I don't remember lots of applause. And one of the things that, in fact, I just spoke about this to a community group yesterday, one of the things that Trump really likes is applause and crowds. And it's really interesting when he sets up various things that there's, I mean, when he went to the CIA, there was a lot of applause, and that's partly because there was a number of staffers there from the White House. And at the unveiling of the new Supreme Court justice, there was lots and lots of applause. And I just found that a little bit disconcerting, but it's something that he likes. He likes to do things in a public fashion with a crowd and a fair amount of positive reinforcement.
There's a new sheriff in town. So
right.
I heard yesterday that he was going to have both nominees present. Was there any truth to that?
I don't think that was going to happen, because that would put the other person in a really awkward situation.
Yes.
And really make it look like The Apprentice, you know, the final episode of The Apprentice or the final episode of The Bachelor. And I think those in the know that are on his staff that have his ear told him that's not something to do. And he didn't do it. And ultimately, all right, of all the things that he's done in the last week and a half, this was probably the best orchestrated one. And a lot of people have not questioned his judgment on this one.
Bob, I'm starting to feel old. The last three names we heard, the three finalists, and then one dropped out, are all much younger than I am.
Well, and that's partly because Trump realizes that this person could end up being on the court for quite a while.
Yeah.
I mean, Clarence Thomas was 43 when he was appointed
wow.
to the Supreme Court, and he's still there. And he's been there for 25 years, you know, a quarter of a century. And it's not looking like he's going to retire anytime soon.
Well, speaking of retiring, You mentioned Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Mm-hmm.
Does she have a date in mind? Has she said anything to lead you to believe that she may be gone during the Trump administration?
I think she, I just can't imagine that she will make it through another 4 years. And it's not because she wants to go. I think it'll be that she's forced to go. She has really severe health problems. She has a form of cancer that's at the tertiary stage, and they haven't released the most recent prognosis in regard to that. And it would just be, I would be very surprised if she made it through Trump's first, you know, through his first term of office. Now, what she could do, being sort of the type of spirit she is wait to 2019 if she can, and knows that the writing's on the wall, and then decide to resign and put Trump in the same exact situation that Obama was in.
Oh, boy.
And that's where the Democrats will have really crystal clear memories of what happened.
Bob Bradley with WJBC's Scott Laughlin and Patty Penn. Illinois continues to operate without a budget. Of the many nonprofit organizations being hit hard by the impasse is Children Home and Aid. Our own Nick McClintock spoke with Bloomington Children Home and Aid Family Support Services Director Mendy Smith.
The reason why I wanted to have you on is, I think this kind of gets lost a little bit. The amount of social service agencies that are in the Twin Cities, you know, everyone thinks about the baby fold as one of them, and Children's Home and Aid is also a very big one that's involved. But there are, you type it into Google, just nonprofits here in the area, it's countless. And I have been on this topic for the past couple days talking about the Illinois state budget and the fact that we still don't have one. The one that, the piecemeal one, the, you know, halfway done one was expired on December 31st. So I wanted to get, I've talked to a couple of state representatives, but I wanted to get the angle from your point of view. Running a social service agency, and a very important one, why don't you start out by saying kind of what Children's Home and Aid does and how you impact the community?
Yeah, thank you. Well, locally here, I work with the Family Support Services, which is primarily prevention-based services with families 0 to 5. So the program that's been impacted the most directly here in the Bloomington area by the lack of the budget is the Healthy Families Program, which we can talk more about later. But Children's Home and Aid also provides early child care here, as well as foster care, a family visit center, crisis nursery. We're at the courthouse. We have clinical services. So just a wide array of services that the whole community, including the rural cities outside of Bloomington, are able to access when we're fully running and funded, makes it a little bit easier. But we still are here, and our doors are open to serve families in those services.
And so, see, that's what strikes me as amazing, the fact that, and I know that you guys also, you know, get other grants, other funding, other funding streams to your programs. You're not entirely dependent on the state. No nonprofit is. But, you know, the fact that you are still able to keep your doors open, tell us a little bit about that difficulty, not only with the fact that we don't have a state budget, but the fact that we are uncertain of when it's going to happen.
Yes, I mean, you brought up that we are multi-funded by a variety of either grants or state or federal, and then we have a very generous community presence for donors and businesses that have stepped up and United Way that help keep multiple programs open during the uncertainty. The issue with nonprofits, you know, that can only go so far, and there is an end point when that ends, and the uncertainty of, with no budget, there's no way to plan month to month on how you're going to continue to do services. So literally every day is a new adventure of, okay, so how are we going to do this? And the decisions that the board has to make based on what money is still coming in, what have we not received any in, what have we received maybe partial money for, and how can we continue to keep these important critical services? We're very lucky that we have leadership and a board that believes in our services and is really, you know, put their neck out to continue these services when the funding is just so uncertain. Even with the stopgap budget that went through December 31st, like you mentioned, we didn't really know when that would come in, how much we would get. It's impossible if you think about running any type of business, how you're going to get day to day on serving children and families.
Well, I mean you could break that down to just the person by person level. You know, you don't
Correct.
Know what your paycheck's going to be every week. It's kind of hard to budget.
Right.
This is mind boggling to me. The fact that you guys can still provide as much good as you guys do. You mentioned a program that is one of the ones that has been hit somewhat hard by that. We want to go into a little bit more detail about that.
Yeah, the Healthy Families Program is a program that's been in the community nearly 20 years, and it is a home visiting program for young first-time moms, 22 years and younger, and we actually serve four counties. McLean, DeWitt, Piatt, and Woodford out of this office, and then we actually, in our Sycamore office up north, have an additional program there that's been impacted. Traditionally, that program has been funded 100% almost, besides fundraising and donors, by DHS, which is state-funded program. So when we're not receiving any funding for that, we had to make some major decisions regarding how we would continue to move forward with that. So we are currently down 5 home visitors for that program. And what the home visitors do is they go out and start with the families when the moms are pregnant and stay with that family to the child's 5th birthday, coming into their home, providing parent education and support, connecting families to resources in the communities, and providing that this whole idea of the parent is the advocate for their child and getting that child ready for school. And when you talk about some of our rural cities, especially outside, when you talk about how rich social services is in Bloomington, that is true, but yet when you start talking about Chenoa and Hayworth and Carlock and those communities, access to those resources are a little bit limited, especially when you talk about the transportation and work schedules and so forth of the communities. So home visiting programs allow this service to happen in the home. You know, we drive our cars there, they let us in, and we meet them on a weekly basis, like I said, up to the child's 5th birthday, providing a variety of resources that the family needs. So with those 5 home visitor positions that are currently we're not able to fill because of the lack of the state budget, that's 100 families that we could be serving if we could fill those positions going forward. So it's been a big impact, especially in our rural communities, because, again, the cost of seeing a family in Hayworth or further away from the office is more mileage cost and more time for staff. So we've had to make some decisions on even to that, like who can we serve based on funding from other resources that we can still have. We have a part-time home visitor, or 1.5, I guess, home visitors here in the Bloomington office that used to be 6.5.
Welcome back to WJBC This Week. President Trump announced his nomination to fill the vacant Supreme Court seat this week. To offer insight on the pick, Illinois State University Professor Emeritus Bob Bradley spoke with WJBC's Scott Laughlin and Patty Penn about Neil Gorsuch.
It's an interesting process. Our guys work very, very hard. I think their ability to evaluate talent is at a high level, and yeah, I think we've seen it on the field here the last several years that we've got some high quality kids.
So, Larry, are you saying that once a kid commits to, like, say, ISU, and then it goes out on social media, mm-hmm. and once he said he's committed to ISU, other schools will then go after him?
Well, that they'll get interested in somebody, or a kid will say, my choices are A, B, and C, and we're A. Other schools will jump in and say, and that's happens everywhere at every level.
Yeah. Yeah. So, do you, with the state of the and Illinois State University is by far heads and shoulders above some of these other state universities. But are you hearing any noise out there about, like, say, a Western or an Eastern kid committing to one of those two schools, then trying to be wooed away? Hey, come play for us because, you know, your university may not be around in a couple of years. That's what we're hearing. The state of Illinois is in such dire straits right now. Are you hearing any of that?
I personally am not hearing any of that. Brock and I, he hasn't mentioned much about it, but we don't get too far into the weeds on stuff like that. I'm sure that there is some of that negativity out there in recruiting. It's not always as professional as you would like it to be. we don't have to worry about that. We sell Illinois State, and we sell our campus and our community and our coaching staff and our academics. And I think kids look at us for the right reasons, yeah. and we work it that way.
Yeah, because I have heard just students have had that happen to them after committing to a university, an out-of-state university, saying, hey, you might want to think this over.
Well, you know what? The enrollment management function for higher education is becoming so much more important just for the campus, because the competition for students is so high right now. As the demographics are showing a slowing in the number of eligible 18-year-olds coming to college, and that trend is going to be downward for the next couple of years before it comes back, there is much more competition just for the regular student. So I'm sure that happens particularly for the ones that are highly academically talented, or obviously when you're looking at diverse pools of candidates to come to your school, there's going to be some competition for those kids. There's always competition for the academic scholarships. So sure, that's going on at that level as well.
That's Illinois State Athletics Director Larry Lyons. More coming up. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. National Signing Day brought quite a bit of attention for a particular Illinois State football recruit. Kobe Buffalo Meat, an offensive lineman from Lawrence, Kansas, became an instant social media sensation. I spoke with Illinois State University Assistant Director of Convergent Media, Nathan Carpenter, to get a look at just how many people were talking about the recruit. Nathan, first off, can you give a brief description in case I didn't, because I feel like I never get this right, about what SMAC is at ISU?
Sure. So SMAC stands for Social Media Analytics Command Center, and it's a specialized lab where we study social media. I guess that's the simplest way to describe it. But we bring in classes, we bring in different student projects, and sometimes we do work with the community as well.
That's much better than what I described it as. So I did try to say, yeah, it's basically they study social media. And obviously the big topic today, something else I was mentioning in the last hour, and I'm sure will come up again, is this dude Kobe Buffalo Meat, who has been lighting it up on Twitter and all over the place. And you guys sent out this tweet, which you can see this interaction they've been getting, and I see a lot of big dots. So can you basically, I guess, explain what you guys have been tracking in regards to this today?
Sure. So we've been following a couple of different areas. Obviously, social media is probably the most interesting right now. And that image that we put out on our Twitter account shows what we call a Twitter stream that, using a tool called Nuvi, they're a company that we work with, they display the most significant tweets and how they're getting shared. And so what we had highlighted in that image was ESPN really covering our announcement here at Illinois State about Kobe's signing during signing day here. And we could just see that going viral. And there are a couple of measurements that we're taking, mostly of the size of the audience in this space. And what we've been really amazed by is that just on Twitter alone, we were getting at least an audience of 35 million people, and that's going to be growing throughout the rest of the day. We're getting a lot of attention out of this.
That is astounding. 35 million people, and that's just on Twitter, you said?
That's just on Twitter. And we have another tool we're working with that looks at news coverage. And this is where it truly gets astounding, is that Kobe Buffalo Meat as a name and as a search term is yielding a potential audience of almost 700 million news readers worldwide right now.
That is absolutely incredible. And this guy's coming to ISU. That is, I didn't think when I saw this guy's name this morning that he was going to blow up quite like this. But since you guys have started SMAC, have you seen something quite like this in regards to ISU? Because I know that the Giving Tuesday has a lot of social media outreach. So, I mean, how can you compare it to something like that?
Currently, this blows away everything we've seen so far. And in our monitors, we're not even searching for his name. We're just looking for discussion about Illinois State. And I think for perspective, we've captured today probably close to at least 10,000 posts that say Illinois State and Kobe Kobe Buffalo meat in them. And, you know, if we look, you know, a couple of weeks ago at, you know, the victory, you know, men's basketball victory at Evansville, that only generated, you know, comparatively, you know, that was a big spike for us.
Uh-huh.
That was maybe in a couple of hundred posts. If we look at, you know, last year, some of our big spikes of activity were really coming at, you know, victories like against Northwestern during the football game, victories against Wichita State. But those usually didn't break more than maybe 1,000 or 2,000 posts over a couple of days. So this is a tremendously viral phenomenon.
It really is. I didn't even realize until I started talking to you how big this was. And you said that's incredible that you're not even looking too specifically at his name, more of the ISU side of it. So what do you guys do with this now? I mean, how does this information help you guys, and what does something like this do for you?
Sure. You know, number one, this is really good name recognition for Illinois State. You know, it's you know, we're a school that you know, because we're not in the Big Ten and we're not you know, always on national you know, TV rankings and everything, that we can now see our name out there. We've heard that Kobe may be appearing on Jimmy Kimmel Live in a couple of days here.
I heard that too.
Yep. And you know, again, with that, we get this recognition that we are, again, this school that can do amazing things. And I think for somebody like Kobe, yeah, he's got this you know, amazing name and really unique name. But what I hope we'll see, and we've already heard this from coaches, is that, you know, his character, his family, and you know, his story are really, you know, even more amazing. So that's something that we're kind of looking forward to hearing more about.
That's something that I've been hearing too, is that he's actually a really good kid. So I hope that we get to know him a lot more, you know, during his time here at Illinois State. So for anyone that hasn't recognized this yet, I'm talking with Nathan Carpenter, Assistant Director of Convergent Media in the School of Communication at Illinois State, and specifically talking about SMAC, which is ISU's Social Media Analytics Command Center, and the outreach that they have had today. If you want to give them a follow, you can on Twitter. You can either search SMAC, which is probably the easier one, or you can find them at ISUSOC_SMACC. And yep. Give WJBC a follow while you're there too. Just saying. So anyway, so all right, we go past today. I mean, how long do you? Is there any way to tell how long this is going to last, or is this just something you're just going to ride out the storm and say, hey, this is great, keep it going?
Sure. So Twitter trends are kind of funny because they spike really quickly and they go away. Just to give you a sense again of how big this was. Let's see, 3 hours ago, Kobe was the number 7 top trending Twitter trend, I guess, in the United States. So he reached number 7 above, at that point, the Senate Judiciary Committee as a Twitter trend. So,
wow.
Yeah, pretty big there. But again, Twitter trends come and go. An hour ago, he was at number 10, and you know, just about 45 minutes ago, he wasn't on that top list anymore. So Twitter can be pretty fickle. It jumps from topic to topic and moves around. So, you know, in terms of that kind of coverage, again, I think he'll see a lot of attention if he goes on national TV. Once the football season gets going, I think we'll see, again, a lot of that attention kicking into place again. I think the fun part, and I've had, you know, great conversations with colleagues and students just about the kind of the poetic side of his name. You know, as soon as a game against North Dakota State shows up, I think a lot of people will be talking about his name again.
Oh yeah, I was thinking about that too, because they're the Bison and you got Buffalo meat.
Exactly.
There's a lot of fun things we can have there, and I'm wondering how long it's going to take for some kind of sandwich or burger or something up in Normal or in Bloomington, wherever, to get named after this guy, because I've already seen a lot of good ones out there, so I would not be surprised if that gets out there. Nathan, anything else you want to offer before we let you go?
No, that's about all I can cover right now. We're going to keep following these trends. We expect them to keep growing over the next couple days. Maybe not quite as viral, but certainly the coverage will continue.
ISU Assistant Director of Convergent Media, Nathan Carpenter. A group of Normal Community High School students asked Congressman Darren LaHood to condemn President Trump's immigration executive order. Some of the group was able to speak with WJBC's Nick McClintock this week.
I'm going to read this to you real quick here, and I'll show it to you whenever I get it, but this was just handed to me by the newsroom. Darren LaHood responded via email. He made a statement in response to President Trump's immigration order. This was sent out yesterday. And he says that the United States will continue to be a beacon of hope and opportunity for those looking to immigrate to a better way of life. But first and foremost, national security for our American citizens and our homeland must be priority number one. He goes on to say that we need to have a precise understanding of who and why people are entering our country. We are a compassionate immigrant nation for those looking to work hard, play by the rules, and embrace American ideals. However, we know that there are terrorist groups and entities who want to harm America, and they are looking to use our immigration system against us and hurt innocent people. I'll go ahead and hand this to whoever wants to see it. You can read the full text of that. But your response to that, the fact that he has made a statement on that, he seems to be saying that, based on my real quick reading of that, is that he understands the concern, but it seems to be that he is supporting this measure, at least in part, because he feels that it is a true national security risk.
I do appreciate LaHood's statement for that, and that he acknowledges, you know, that we are a nation of immigrants. But I think even just looking at it, just looking at the effectiveness of the ban, it's not really helping our national security. And as we said before, there have really been no attacks by any immigrants and refugees from these countries. And many people in the government have said that, you know, this is making us less safe, and it's actually increasing more radicalization. And it has been said it's almost a victory for some terrorist groups in the Middle East. And we certainly do not want to be inflaming that more than it is now.
Nick McClintock here on WJBC on the Afternoon Report, talking with several members of the Social Studies Club of Normal Community High School as they were at Representative Darren LaHood's office yesterday. The overarching theme to this entire argument has been, you hear people on the against side saying the same things that you guys are saying. You're stating the fact that it's more of a compassion issue. It's more of treating a human decency issue, and making sure that people are treated with respect while at the same time making sure that we are safe as a country. No one is, as Mike Matika from Not In Our Town said yesterday on the air, no one here is advocating for open borders. No, everyone's saying that there needs to be a system in place. But my next question for you guys would be, do you feel that people who are in support of this have been more influenced by the perception that has been said about what some refugees and people from other nations could potentially bring, rather than the facts of it? Basically just saying that you know, the perception of everything, the perception that Donald Trump in Twitter, he said, well, there's bad dudes that are coming in here. That's a quote from his Twitter account. You know, and not to make fun of it, obviously he has that stance and he's the president of our country, but the other side, which you guys have pointed out with facts and figures, are the fact that the refugee program to get into the United States, first of all, you don't get to choose to come to the United States. That's not something that's done. The process to get into the U.S. is roughly 2 to 3 years, and whenever you get here, you don't get to choose where you get to go. It's not a free ride by any means at all. And the overall immigration ban, like you said, there has been zero reports of a immigrant coming to this country that is not basically every single terrorist attack perpetrated on our soil has been done by at least partially a either a valid green card holder or a U.S. national. So do you think that, again, people are more influenced by the facts and figures, or do you think they're more influenced by the perception?
I think that there's definitely a perception. It might be that they support what Donald Trump is doing just because, and that's not to knock anybody for that, but many people believe that Donald Trump is doing the right thing here. I think that if people are going to look at facts and figures, they have to look at the whole picture. What you see is that Illinois and the United States as a whole have the most rigorous vetting process of any developed Western nation in the world. What we have is a system, like you said, that takes 2 to 3 years, and we're actually taking as a percentage of our population, the least amount of refugees from the Middle East of any Western developed nation. And so we're really taking the smallest brunt of any people who should be taking refugees to help support other regions of the world. And if people are looking at facts from other refugee crises, we see that from the Korean War and from the Vietnam War, we had Korean people and Vietnamese people who immigrated to the United States who were looking to avoid that conflict. And what we ended up with were people who were willing to work, people who were willing to contribute to our society. And I think that what you have to look at is what is going to be the not just the benefit of helping other people, but the benefit of bringing more diverse people and bringing more people into this country who would be able to bring their own backgrounds and to have a much greater economic effect to help us grow together stronger as a nation.
Well, guys, we're almost out of time for this segment, and I want to first of all thank Mr. Lawler and everyone for coming in. It means a lot, and here's the reason why I'll say it means a lot. I am one of the I am the youngest host here on WJBC. I'm 26 years old, and I will admit that in the past, my thoughts have been kind of brushed aside because of my age. And I'm talking to a group of, was it three juniors and three seniors here, talking about a worldwide politics issue and the amount in which you guys came prepared and the amount in which you guys came knowledgeable about the subject is incredible to me. So thank you, first of all, for that. By the way, anyone who is trying to call, would love to get you guys on the air. We may do that in the second segment. Unfortunately, we don't have enough headphones to go around for these guys so they can't hear your call. That's why I'm not taking them right now. But again, thank you guys for coming in. Continue to make your voices known. Continue to make your voices heard. And the next time you guys get an opportunity, make sure you get informed and go out and vote. I appreciate
Thank you.
Yep. That is Mr. Lawler, the social studies teacher and head of the social studies club, Emma Spader, Felicia, Ovia, Katie, Hallie, and Ryan. I get all those names right again?
Yes.
Awesome.
The Weekend News is up next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Time to look at the Weekend News. An Illinois state football recruit has been arrested on rape charges in Jefferson City, Missouri. KMIZ-TV reports Rashawn Woods was arrested for three counts of first-degree rape or attempted rape. Woods allegedly assaulted two victims on separate occasions in the last several months. Illinois State announced this week Jefferson City native had committed to the school. Illinois State officials say they are aware of the situation and are awaiting more information. Caterpillar announced Tuesday it's moving its corporate headquarters from Peoria to Chicago, but the company says Peoria remains its hometown. Corporate spokeswoman Rachel Potts says when the transition is final, about 300 people will work out of the new office. However, she says the vast majority of employees in Peoria will not be moving.
We have several functions and facilities that this won't impact as far as day-to-day operations. A factory that makes tractors in East Peoria, a foundry in Mapleton, a demonstration center in Edwards, a visitor center that is right here in downtown Peoria.
Potts says Caterpillar currently has about 1,200 workers throughout central Illinois. She says the company has been enduring some of the toughest times in its history, and the company needs to get close to a global transportation hub. A capacity crowd of about 1,100 packed the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts Wednesday night to rally in support of immigrants and diversity. Not in Our Town hosted the event in response to President Trump's executive order on immigration. Bevan Chobin believes the order is unconstitutional.
And I wanted to show support for our neighbors, that there are lots of us who don't agree with it and welcome them and are not worried about national security threats or anything of that nature.
There was a smaller group that gathered outside the BCPA that included Wayne Reinthaler, and he said that President Trump's order is a pause so the immigration process can be reviewed. Commission that's created a framework to change Illinois' school funding formula has produced its final report. State Senator and Commission member Jason Berrickman tells WJBC it's now up to lawmakers to make sure the work of the group's 25 members doesn't end up on a shelf.
I think we've got great progress on this. I hope to be able to work with my colleagues across the aisle on this and advance the ball on this immediately.
Berrickman says the formula would help many downstate schools, especially those with higher percentages of students in poverty. The funding model would cost up to $6 billion more per year. Congressman Darren LaHood is backing President Trump's travel ban put in place last week. LaHood spoke out against Trump's campaign calls to ban Muslim immigrants and still is against the idea of singling out religions, but adds this executive order does not do that.
Our number one objective should be protect the homeland, make sure terrorists are not coming to this country. Those seven countries, Libya, which is a lawless state, Somalia, Yemen, Iraq, Iran, Syria, these are countries that are known terrorist entities.
A group of high school students are calling on LaHood to condemn the travel ban.
As we said before, there have really been no attacks by any immigrants and refugees from these countries.
Felisa Gia says the ban is not helping national security. Up next, the week to come. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Now a look at the week to come. The Normal Town Council meets Monday and will discuss a new rule which would mean new businesses with video gaming machines are not allowed to open within 200 feet of a single-family neighborhood. On Tuesday, a group of activists are holding a Resist the Trump Agenda public rally in Uptown Normal, and the St. Jude Radiothon takes place Thursday and Friday. This has been WJBC This Week. To listen to this week's program again, go to the WJBC.com podcast page. Thanks for listening. I'm Adam Staszynski.